Breaker, written by Rob Aspinall, narrated by Alistair Austin.
One, a man's got to have a cord. That's why I'm not going to drop the guy. I'm just going to scare the shit out of him. And this is my favourite place to do it. Grab them by their belt and flip them upside down. I've got Mr. Cavock here dangling over the edge of the old rope works. It's a beaten up Victorian warehouse in the middle of a concrete, needle and weed jungle. It's stark and dirty. An abandoned world a couple of miles out of the city. Cold and windy too, especially in late February. I bet if I dropped Mr. Cavock right now, the animals and birds would clean up the mess before the council did. It's that kind of place. Cavock himself is a middle-aged guy, Turkish, I think. Short, chubby, receding, baggy black slacks and a matching jumper over a white shirt, a flash of gold around his hairy wrists and fingers. That's a nice watch, I say. You buy it or nick it.
I don't steal.
Sure.
Is this what this is about?
He asks, wriggling and kicking his stumpy legs.
A few stolen watches?
I let him slide a little lower over the edge of the flat cement roof. He gets a nice view of 10 floors down. You know why you're here, Mr. Cavock. You've been roughing up some of the neighbours, trying to get them to sell.
The business is growing. I offer a fair price. They're stubborn.
Yeah, well, one of them is insurance with Mr. Rodenko, and Mr. Rodenko would like you to stop.
I'm not scared of your boss.
He's not my boss, I say, tipping him further over the edge. I'm independent, like Switzerland.
Then whatever he's paying you, I'll give you 10% extra.
You cheap bastard.
Okay.
He says, his head filling with blood.
14.
I laugh and shake my head. I let go of his belt. He begins to slide through my grip. I've found over the years that expensive pants slide easy.
Shit!
He yells. I tighten my grip around his knees. You're getting heavy, Mr. Cavock. You agree or not? Cavock eyeballs the patchy, cracked concrete below. He looks up at me.
No.
No. You're hanging off a roof, mate. I'm so surprised I almost drop him. By now they're usually giving up their wife and kids anything to let him up. I decide he needs some extra motivation. Perhaps I'm not being clear, I say, letting go completely. He gasps. I catch him by his fat ankles. He swings. You know, fat ankles like these are harder to grip. His face shifts from panic to something else. I don't know. Kind of weird resolve, I suppose you'd call it.
I don't care what you do, he says.
Fine, I say, letting go of an ankle. I feel the strain in my right arm. Did I mention my old shoulder injury? It freezes up if I hang on too long. That's the truth. I once had this guy by his foot. My whole arm went dead. Yeah, that was a mess.
If you're gonna drop me, Cavock says. I don't bow to anyone, especially not a Russian.
I can see why this pig-headed fool's built himself a nice little empire. He's one hell of a negotiator. Okay, I say. I've got another question. If I drop you right here, right now, who inherits your business? Your wife?
My son, Omar.
Well then, my grip is going to give out in about 30 seconds from now, and when your head makes a Jackson Pollock all over the concrete, I'll drive across town and find young Omar. I'll bring him up here and go through this all over again. Assuming, of course, Mr. Odenko's happy to stop there. I can see him run it through his computer. He looks at the ground, looks at me, shakes his head.
Okay, but leave my sons.
Just in time, too. My shoulder's getting stiff.
I haul him up with both hands and flip him upright. He collapses against the lip of the roof. I drag him onto his feet and hold him while he gets his balance.
Can we go now?
He asks, checking his watch. I've got appointments.
Course, I say, right after you go through the gift shop.
Huh?
I can't let you leave without a souvenir,
I say, pulling my phone from the inside pocket of my black bomber. I dial 999.
What are you talking about?
He asks.
I hold up a finger for him to shush. A lady operator answers.
Ambulance, I say.
She patches me through. A guy asks me what kind of emergency it is. I tell him it's the serious kind. I give him the address and cut off the call. I tuck my phone away and square up to Kavok.
Right, so which arm then?
Which what?
The left or the right? Which can you do without?
Kavok attempts to run. I lunge forward and grab him. I bend him over double with a hand pressed on his shoulder. I extend the left arm out. I'll go with this one.
No, the other one, the other one.
I guess he wanks with his left.
I switch to the right arm. I straighten it out. On three, I tell him. He squeezes his eyes shut and grits his teeth. One, two. I snap it quick. He screams and scares a couple of pigeons off the side of the building. The guy whimpers, holds the top of his arm. The bone sticks out the wrong way through the sleeve of his jumper.
There, I say, admiring a nice job. Clean as a whistle.
He throws up as I lead him across the roof.
You animal,
he says, trembling. Round and round we go down the uneven, narrow staircase that stinks of junky piss and dead things. He curses me all the way, all the names under the Manchester clouds. I walk him across the stretch of unused land, weeds up to the knees, broken glass crunching under my trusty docker boots, black and steel toed. One of three pairs I rotate to keep them fresh. I don't wear trainers. Trainers are no good for kicking indoors, or ribs. Not thick enough for when you're walking over needles and glass. Not grippy enough for when the floor gets slippy with blood. No, what you need in this game is a sturdy pair of boots. Health and safety always comes first. We stop in my car, a big dark blue Peugeot saloon. Sporty and pricey in its day. I've got it parked up on a street where Prozzies offer a blow-and-go drive-through service. You smoke? I ask Kavok. He nods his head, shiny with cold sweat. I open the passenger door and reach inside the glove box. I pull out a pack of cigs and a silver lighter. I take out a cig and push it in Kavok's mouth. I light it. He puffs away, calmer now, the shock kicking in.
You'll not smoke?
He asks me as I put away the lighter and cigarettes. Only after messy jobs, I say. The cigs are reserved for the people I hurt. I'm good like that.
I can't believe you broke my arm,
Kavok says, blowing smoke and staring at the bone, getting used to it. You'll be right as rain in a few weeks, I say, and count yourself lucky. Rudenko wanted a leg. As Kavok makes light work of the cigarette, the ambulance shows up. Lights flashing blue, siren on silent. It pulls up in front of my car. A pair of paramedics in green overalls jump out. A man and a woman in their 40s, short, but then most people are short next to me. This is your man, I say, pointing to Kavok. I'll leave you to it.
What happened?
The woman asks. She snaps on a pair of blue latex gloves as the male paramedic opens the back of the ambulance. He fell over, I say, walking around to the driver's side of the Peugeot. Didn't you, Mr. Kavok? Kavok tosses the cigarette butt and nods. The woman guides him towards the back of the ambulance, shaking her head and giving me the evils. Like I give a shit. I get behind the wheel of my car and reverse out of there before they can ask me any more questions. See, I told you I'm a nice bloke. Most enforcers wouldn't have called the ambulance. They'd have left him up on the roof with a busted leg. That's the problem with the new breed. They lack principles, discipline, class. I spin the car round and chew past a pair of late afternoon prostitutes in fishnet tights. I hit the elevated ring road that circles the city. The Manchester skyline like a giant game of Tetris. Some buildings old, some new, some made of brick, some made of glass. Red and white cranes working on dropping the latest pieces in place.
As I tear past traffic in the outside lane, I get on the phone to Rodenko. I tell him it's done. Kavik agrees. Rodenko tells me to come over to Dmitri's pronto. He sounds pissed off. I hang up the call and smile. A pissed off client means there's a big problem. And the bigger the problem, the more I get paid.
2. It's bouncing down with rain, sky painted black. I'm parked outside Dmitri's, a Greek restaurant Rodenko bought to rinse the cash he was making from a crystal meth network. He doesn't say that, of course. Keeps his cards close to his chest. But if he liked Greek food so much, he wouldn't order the Donna pizza and chips every time. Anyway, it's a rundown place on the outskirts of the city. One of a terrace row of takeaway joints. I wait to be summoned. Neil Diamond cranked up on the stereo to play over the rain. Love on the Rocks. I sing at the top of my lungs. It gets to the good part, the big chorus. I let it rip. A baritone voice. I could have been a crooner, but the gangs on my estate got to me first. Just as the song's reaching its peak, a fist pounds on my window. I stop singing and dive for the stereo control, spinning the volume to zero. I wind down the window, fat, cold raindrops bouncing off the doorsill. Frogger leans in and fixes me with those big, wide-apart eyes that earned him his nickname. "Why are you singing to?" "Metallica," I say. I'm not ashamed of my Neil Diamond fan club membership, but it doesn't do me any favours mentioning it. If this arsehole ever finds out, I'll never hear the end of it. Besides, I can't have the underworld thinking I'm soft. "The boss is ready for you," Frogger says, stepping away from the door. He pulls his red hoodie over his head. I open the door and get out. "You still driving this piece of wank?" he asks, snorting and spitting phlegm on the pavement. I load down a few cars and see his blue Nissan Skyline with the big spoiler and gold wheel trims. "You still driving the pig magnet?" "Like I give a toss," he says. "They know who I am. Come on." I follow Frogger inside. It's warm and takeaway bright. Smells of lamb and chip oil. It's a dinky place with a few tables and chairs on either side as you approach the counter. The lino's a dirty blue and white check in need of replacing. The menu board over the counter shows illuminated pictures of sick-looking meat. Dmitri keeps the restaurant empty when Rodenko's around. Hardly matters if the place makes money or not. The big cheese himself sits on the middle booth on the right-hand side. Sure as a bear shits, he's halfway through his Donna pizza and chips, a 14-incher. The fat bastard must be nervous about something. After 10 years of working for a guy, you get to know his habits. And he pigs out more than usual when he's nervous. Me and Frogger stand dripping on the lino. I see Rodenko's personal bodyguard sitting to the left, a cue ball in grey sweat taking up the entire table, a burger demolished down to the crumbs in front of him on a wax wrap. He stares at me every time I come to see his boss, as if he's trying to put the fear into me. "Knobhead." Rodenko sprinkles the pizza with salt, doesn't bother looking up. "Sit down." Frogger takes the chair on the inside of Rodenko. I sit across from the boss. The chairs look play school compared to the four of us sitting on them. Freddy, Rodenko's bodyguard, is the biggest. 6'9" tall and a long walk around. I'm next in line, 6'5" and solid. Frogger's 6'3", 6'4" if he didn't hunch. He's lanky and wiry like a court hanger. Rodenko's big too, but only in a circle. He's 5'9" tops. And that's in those Cuban heels, makes him stand taller next to his blonde giraffe of a wife.
"The usual, Frogger,"
Dmitri shouts from behind the counter.
"Just the meat,"
Frogger says in a nasal Mancunian accent. No trace of his Lithuanian family in his voice, only the shaved, sandy hair and angular features.
"You want anything?"
Rodenko asks me between gobfuls of chips. He chews with his mouth open, breathes through his nose. A suntan face that greases itself. "I'm good," I say, checking my watch. "Out for a meal in a bit."
"Your daughter?"
Rodenko asks. "How do you guess?"
"'Cause you're a Billy No-Mace, that's why,"
Frogger says, snorting. Rodenko looks sideways at Frogger. Frogger shuts up. His tray of Donna meat slides into the picture. He shovels the meat in like he's gone feral.
"Let's talk business,"
Rodenko says. We've got a big problem. The trial. I thought that was a dead end. I say, prosecution didn't have a witness. Not until last night, Rodenko says. Kid saw us do it, Frogger says. He turns his jaw to the ceiling and lowers a strip of meat into his big cartoon mouth. They saw you do it, Rodenko says, slurping on a foam cup of black coffee. I was just standing there, but they want the big fish, you know, not the little one. If you'd hired me in the first place, I say, none of this would be happening. Rodenko shrugs. Cash flow. Anyway, Frogger says, how'd we know some kid'd be hanging around the tunnels on the estate? One thing I forgot to mention about Rodenko, he's been on trial for a couple of months, out on bail. Something to do with a bookmaker shot in the head and left in an unused sewer tunnel that runs under a large block of flats. I know it well. I grew up around there. Used to stash my money and drugs in that tunnel when it was still working. I'd stick a peg on my nose and plastic bags on my trainers, go in and hide the gear where no one ever looked. But that's when I was a dealer. I'm a changed man now. What they call a fixer. And yeah, I might lose a client if he goes down. But there'll always be people who need straightening out. People the likes of Frogger and Freddy can't handle. So I suppose you want me to do something about this kid, I say. You suppose right, Rodenko says. I've got a man on the inside. They're keeping him in a hotel for 2 days before he takes the stand. If the kid testifies. Rodenko straightens up in his chair, punches the centre of his chest. Fucking heartburn. Don't worry, I say as Rodenko returns to his pizza. Just give me the details and I'll sort it. Rodenko wipes his mouth with a serviette, nods. I'll have the hotel and the room number tomorrow, somewhere in the city centre. Frogger will come with you. Oh, no, no, no. Ever had to work with someone you'd happily see fed alive and into an industrial mincer? Now imagine that fucker is a walking disaster who turns everything into a hurricane of shit, and you're the one left holding the mop. Yeah, that's Frogger. I'm a one-man show, Mr. Rodenko, you know that. Rodenko shakes his head. No, you take Frogger. He's your contact with our man inside. And anyway, it's a two-man job. Sorry, Mr. Rodenko, but you know my terms. I hear a screech of chair legs across Lino. Freddy casts a shadow as he gets to his feet. I turn to my left. Don't make me get out of my chair, Q-ball. Freddy stomps over regardless. It's like that scene in Jurassic Park, when the T-Rex is coming and the water in the cup is bouncing. I get to my feet, my chair in one hand behind my back. Before the big man can lay a knuckle on me, I swing it around and up in both hands, hard and fast. The rim of the metal seat cracks the underside of Freddy's nose. He staggers back and collapses against his table. It flips up sideways and spills a large Coke down his front. He clutches his nose in both hands, blood all over the place. I return the chair to the floor and sit on it. Frogger smirks and carries on eating. Rodenko doesn't bat an eyelid. I'll do it if I can bring my own man, I say before pointing at Frogger. But I'm not working with that. I'm not jizzing my pants about it either, Frogger says, shaking up a bottle of mayo. Do it or don't do it, Rodenko says. It's still getting done. Well, good luck then, I say, standing. I start to walk away. Double your usual fee, I hear Rodenko say. Triple, I reply, pausing on my way out. And I plan the op. Freedom's a seller's market. Rodenko soon caves in. Fine. And cash up front this time, I say. Payment for this one and you owe me for Kavok. Frogger will have the money. You'll get a call tomorrow, just don't fuck it up. I turn, a hand on the door. When do I ever? Rodenko chews it over. He grunts. I suppose that's why I let you rob me blind. You're worse than my wife. Now get the fuck out of my restaurant. I step out into the rain, reeking of chip oil. A job with Frogger. That's all I need. Still, one kid. A guy on the inside. How hard can it be?
3. The rain has stopped, but a strong wind blows across the half-empty car park. Few people have a car here. Most are beat-up rust buckets a couple of decades old. That's why I drive the Peugeot. It's fast with a turbo engine, but it's not fancy enough to get nicked. I walk across the car park to the flats, pink balloon tugging in the wind. It's one of those fancy ones. A big number 19 tied with sparkly ribbon instead of string. Don't want to leave it in the car in case someone steals it. The block of flats looms high over me. Looks more like an open prison than a residential area. I notice a black Mercedes saloon parked up near the main entrance to my block. Not a raindrop on it means the owner keeps it undercover, lives local and only just arrived. I look around me. I don't see any trouble, so I head into the open communal area at the bottom of the block. The lifts are playing up again. There's a scruffy note written in biro and taped to the breeze block wall. Someone kicked the shit out of a lift door and now both are knackered. So I take the stairs. 7 floors up, concrete steps and naked walls scrawled in graffiti and stained with old piss. No, make that fresh piss. Disgusting. I feel the climb in my legs. I'm not quite as young and fit as I used to be. For a second, it occurs to me that I might be getting too old for this business. Then I think, nah. Gotta get back in the gym, that's all. Lay off the cake and biscuits. I'm 5 floors up when I hear another pair of feet a couple of flights below. Heavy scuffs in shoes, the formal kind. Must be someone dressed up for core, I think. Buzz around the railing onto the next flight, I see a burly guy coming up below me. A walk-in wardrobe in a dark blue overcoat, shaved ginger hair receding on top. I keep climbing, up to the 7th. The guy picks up the pace behind me, breathing heavy. I hit the covered walkway that leads to my flat. It looks out over the industrial wastelands. High-rises, terrace houses, boarded-up shops and run-down factories, merging into converted mills and swanky glass apartments as they get closer to the city. Along the walkway to the left sits a long line of pale blue doors. Mine is number 707. There's a guy standing facing me at the end of the walkway, jet black hair and rugged features. A young version of me before the battle scars and grey sprinkles. I move towards my door, heavy raindrops dripping slow off the roof edge. I stop and tie the balloon off on the walkway railing. Slow, careful. Both eyes on the guy in front. I reach inside the left pocket of my faded black jeans, pull out my door keys. My younger lookalike starts towards me. I unzip my jacket as I walk. I turn at the sound of those fancy shoes. The ginger guy from the stairwell has caught up, red in the face, blowing out clouds of cold air. The net closes in. A guy on either side, me in the middle. I pass door 4, 5, 6. I get to 7 and stop. I reach slow inside my jacket. I grab a fresh nothing. Bollocks. I left my gun in the glove box of the car. I leave my hand there anyway, maybe I'll fool them. No. They close the gap. As they reach inside their coats, I fly through the options in my head. Option 1. I plant a left on the chin of the guy in front, spin and throw a backhanded right at the one behind. Option 2. I move fast as the guy in front reaches for his weapon. I grab it and direct the shot at Ginger Nuts behind. Then I wrestle the shooter over the steel railing. Option 3. I bust through my own front door before they can get a clean shot. I run through the hall into the kitchen and grab my sawn off from under the sink. As they run in behind me, I come out blasting. Yeah, the third one sounds best. Okay. 3, 2, 1.